Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks for being with us on this Monday afternoon. It's always so nice to be back on a Monday afternoon and get to do this again for another week, and you make that possible, and we're very grateful for that. We're grateful for the time you spend with us. If you'd like to call today, let me give you the number, 888-318-7884. We have a really good Monday show for you. Second hour, the most irenic Catholic apologist that I know. You're going to have to look that up. If irenic is not one of your words, you're going to have to look it up. Swan Sona, second hour. He's been away from us for a while, but it'll really be nice to have Swan back. This hour, I think you all know him, Jason Evert with us, and he has a new book out on the whole gender thing, male, female, other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. Jason Evert, thanks for being here with us.
Hey, it's good to be back with you, Si.
So we need this, actually. This is like, you know, a lot of books are like, the author needed another book out. But this one, we need this. So what got you going, and how'd you end up writing this, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender?
Yeah, well, I mean, starting 25 years ago, back when I got started with Catholic Answers right out of college, doing a lot of chastity talks, and, you know, things are progressing, there are cultural battles going on, but just in the last 5 years, things just took this hockey stick acceleration of, in terms of this issue, so many others, but going to so many schools, like just Catholic grade schools, and then the principal, like, yeah, we've got 7 kids in the lower school that identify as trans, and, two that identify as non-binary, and it's like, these are the Catholic schools. And then the parents coming up to me in the parish, like, my daughter wants to get on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and get a top surgery, and she's only 15, and my nephew is now my niece. And it just seems like everybody has a touch point in one place or another of their lives. And, you know, and there are Catholics wrestling with gender dysphoria that come up to me and like, okay, well, what's God's plan for my life? And I realized that we're really behind the game in terms of formulating a pastoral response to all of this. I mean, it's one thing to have an apologetic answer of, okay, this is Catholic anthropology, but it's like, okay, how do we apply that to these delicate pastoral situations of, okay, do I use their preferred pronoun? And, you know, my cousin wants me to do this and wants to do that. What do we do? And so really trying to show how to balance charity with clarity, love with truth, to show people, look, there's room in the church for you to navigate through these questions of identity, and the church is not here to shame you. We know that you didn't choose to wrestle with this. God has a plan for your life, and he made you good, and how to walk through this difficult situation with people who you love, or even if you're struggling with it.
Jason Evert, our guest this hour, we're going to talk about this whole gender issue. If you have questions about that, 888-318-7884. We'd love to have you involved in the conversation, not just for Catholics, anybody who would like to talk about the gender issue. 888-318-7884. I'm sure that you know Jason from chastity.com, or maybe you've had the benefit of one of his chastity talks. We'll give out all that information again and again, but I want to really stress this book, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. And I'm saying the question mark out loud because I know you are not asserting that there is other.
So we've got the question mark in there.
Yeah. I want to get to maybe the hardest thing first, and that is accepting what people say about themselves so that they don't take their lives. Because I do this. We often get to this. As a matter of fact, I don't remember too many times talking about gender issues without somebody calling and saying, you know, you talking that way is leading to people committing suicide.
Yeah, no, and that's a very powerful narrative to hear. Like, okay, if I don't affirm this person in their transition, then I'm contributing to the worsening of their mental health condition. So I don't want to do that. So yeah, well, you be you. You be your authentic self, and if that means puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, then just go ahead and do it. But the studies have shown that once you put the kids on the puberty blockers, the girls in particular are more likely to self-harm. They have a greater suicidal ideation if they go through the whole transition and get the surgeries. What they found is within 10 years of that operation, their suicide rate climbs to 19 times higher than the general population. And if you isolate out the female to male transitioners, you're looking at a suicide rate more than 40 times higher than the general population. And this typically happens about a decade after the surgery. out immediately overnight. And well, people say, well, that's because of all you transphobic bigots. Well, I would say to hold off there. That theory called the social stress theory, meaning the lack of acceptance is contributing to all these suicides. What the studies have actually shown is that the study was done with the big suicide rates in Sweden. It's a very progressive country, very welcoming on LGBT issues. The reason why we have such a huge suicide rate here is 90% of people who commit suicide have a diagnosable mental health condition. And hormones and surgery are not the way to treat those things. And so when they're promised these hormones and the surgeries that'll finally take away all this dysphoria, and then the anesthesia wears off, so many of them are realizing, wait a minute, this didn't solve my problems. This actually created more problems for me. And that's why on like reddit.com, there's a subreddit that has a community forum. 43,000 people are identifying there as detransitioners, screaming from the rooftops, hit the brakes, people. This is not the answer. This is not some one size fits all. Oh, you struggle with your gender. You are trans. Go through transition. You'll live happily ever after. They said that is a narrative that is proven to be wrong by the data that's coming out right now.
Why don't I see those people on CNN? There's 43,000 of them. Why am I not seeing them on the nightly news?
Oh, they're getting out there more on the Joe Rogan kind of thing. So, well, they're interviewing these detransitioners. So it really goes against the narrative. And it's a very powerful narrative. If you're a parent and your LGBT club at the local high school tells your kid, well, if your parents don't let you get puberty blockers, then they're not really affirming of you and they're not supporting you and they're not letting you be your authentic self. You're more likely to kill yourself. For parents, that's really scary because what they tell the parents is, what would you rather have? Would you ever have a living son or a dead daughter? In other words, you better transition or the child won't live. But this needs to be debunked. And yes, some people do take their lives, but what we've got to realize, there's so much more going under the surface here. I know an anesthesiologist, and he said, I won't even give anesthesia, you know, to a patient who's going through one of these surgeries. Because he said, look, I've seen their medical charts. I've seen the fact that 42% of these girls have already been diagnosed with autism. They have anxiety disorders, a history of sexual trauma, attachment disorders in their family. And to give these kids surgery, he said, this is collaborating with a mental illness instead of actually treating it. It's malpractice. It is the 21st century of a lobotomy, and I will have nothing to do with it.
The number is 888-318-7884. Talking with Jason Evert about his new book, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. So what about the science that says, look, biological sex and gender are two different things. Are we standing against some great mountain of science that has shown us that gender is distinct from biological sex?
Well, the only thing that you could apply science to would be sex itself, because that's measurable. Gender, as it's being used, is an internal sense of self. It's a belief system. And so you can't put that on a scale and measure it. So scientifically, an organism, how the organism is organized for reproduction is how you determine sex. And so for the human species, we either have, you know, a male gamete or female gamete, a mature reproductive cell, sperm or an egg, that's it. There's no spectrum. There's no third gamete. It is what it is. You can have a disorder of sexual development where one or both of them is not functioning properly, but you do not have a spectrum of sex. We are a sexually dimorphic species, and that's the way we are. Now, the challenge with gender is this word can mean so many things, it's hard to pin down. It used to be used for grammar, and then it was used for biological sex, like a gender reveal party. And then it became gender roles in terms of our sociological way in which we express our masculinity and femininity. And then more recently, it's a gender identity, which is an internal sense of either being male, female, both or neither, or somewhere in between. This is not a scientific concept. This is an ideology. This is an idea that your identity is something other than your body. But the problem is, if we untether our identity from our body, identity will attach to personality. But there are as many personalities as there are persons, and you'll end up with an infinite spectrum of genders, which is where we're at now.
Because I was going to ask you that, how many genders are there now? But it's just goes, it's an ever multiplying thing.
Yeah. Stanford University's college application has 18 you have to pick from. Male and female actually aren't on the list. Facebook is up to 58. Facebook in the UK is 71. Tumblr has a list of 500. The University of Essex over in England says there are now an infinite number of genders. Some guy actually reached out at the university, said, well, can you send me the list? So they sent him a list of 23, said, you got to do better than that. Can you at least give me 500? And they said, well, some of them are unknown and unrecognized. He said, well, how can you count them if they're unknown? He said, the reason you can't count them is it would take you forever to write the list. And if you could write the list, the whole universe could not contain it, even if you use really tiny font. You know, so he won the debate, you know, but I look at that, it's like, okay, great, you won the debate. Who's better off for that little argument? You have that guy who's thinking a lot about the logical inconsistencies, but he probably doesn't even know anyone wrestling with it. And then you've got these people in the LGBT, you know, clinics or whatever on campus, and they're spending a lot of time with people who really wrestle with these things, but they're not thinking through. So, but what if we were to take kind of charity and clarity and kind of bring them together, you know, love and truth, and let them have coffee together. So let's take the beauty of the church's teachings on the human person and enter into these individuals' lives and get to know them, listen to their stories, not treat them like second-class citizens or lepers, but realize maybe they're going through some stuff. Maybe instead of just giving them some great apologetic argument, we could just have coffee with them, let them tell their stories, get to know these people. They're in our churches, and they need to know that they're not invisible. God loves them, and he has a plan for them.
Jason Evert is our guest. 888-318-7884 is the number. The new book is A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. It's out now. 888-318-7884. We'll continue our discussion with Jason after this, but your calls are welcome. 888-31-TRUTH. Right back with more with Jason Evert on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi friends, Jonet Williams here. Join me every Wednesday on Women of Grace Live as I welcome New Age researcher and blogger for Women of Grace, Sue Brinkman. Sue and I will be talking about all the wacky things that could distract you from your faith. Psychics, yoga, Reiki, crystals, acupuncture, Ouija boards, tarot cards, and astral traveling are just a few of the stranger things we discuss. That's why we call it Wacky Wednesday. So join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Male, female, other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender is the new book from Jason Evert. Jason has been doing yeoman's work for decades, helping lots and lots of people, young, old, and in between, come to understand the beauty of the call to live a chaste life, a life of devotion and faithfulness, a life of openness to God and to life and all that. And now here we are facing a new challenge, to the very basics of human identity. Is there really such a thing as a male and a female? Am I oppressing someone if I say that? Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. You know, I was thinking about what you said before because I really very much appreciate your take on listening and meeting and sharing. And we can't share the good news if we don't share life with people. We can't shut people out because they're different. On the other hand, I have a completely different reaction, and you could please tell me if I'm wrong, to those who are promoting this, you know, institutions or sports leagues or politicians. Yeah. You start to feel like, where are the adults that to just say, no, we're not. We're in the National Hockey League. We're not going to do that. I mean, why do I need the National Hockey League to get involved in this? So I do feel that level of frustration, if I can admit it.
Yeah, no, and that's fair because you have the way that I kind of look at it is it's almost like imagine a husband and a wife in a big fight, and they're just screaming at each other, but at their feet is a kid who feels completely invisible and ignored, just traumatized by all the bickering going back and forth. And it isn't even like the left and the right anymore, because there's many people within the trans community that are saying, no, 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 this is child abuse. We should not be having drag show queen reading stuff in kindergarten libraries. We shouldn't be putting 9-year-old girls on puberty blockers and letting girls in Portland, Oregon get a double mastectomy at the age of 15 without their parental parents' permission or knowledge.
Right.
That is child abuse. These are voices within the trans community saying, no, 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 we got to draw the line here. This has gotten out of control. So it isn't like just a left-right kind of thing. There are plenty of people who identify as Democrat, pro-choice, lesbian, activist, who are like, you're not a woman because you went through that surgery, you know. And so it isn't a left-right, black-and-white kind of thing. But yeah, it's right to be stirred up and be like, wait a minute, they're coming after our kids in these public schools. Like, I mean, the state Department of Education in Massachusetts had mandatory story time for kindergarten through fourth graders. 480,000 of these kids had to sit and listen to these gender storybooks that when you were born, the doctor said it's a boy or a girl. But if that baby grows up to be transgender, then it means that the doctor and mommy and daddy were wrong. And they're reading this to like first graders throughout the entire state of Massachusetts. This should get your blood boiling, because there's no room anymore for a kid girl to be a tomboy anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're into soccer and you're into like climbing trees. Well, maybe you're not a girl. It's like, well, wait a minute. I thought these overly rigid stereotypes were the problem, and now we're caving into them and saying if I don't fit it, that I've got the wrong body. Yeah.
888-318-7884. Yeah. One of the you know, this was a great thing. You had girls climbing trees and you know, adventuring and having fun and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And now that means she's not a girl. So what does that mean? That to be a girl, you have to be a stereotype. You can't be a real person.
Yeah, and these stereotypes are really fueling, I believe, a lot of these gender questioning with the kids. Because imagine being an adolescent girl today. My goodness, I mean, with social media, you are expected to be sexy and innocent and assertive but submissive and successful but domestic. Like all these polar opposites that are kind of just impossible to balance simultaneously. A lot of the girls are just kind of opting out. And it's not necessarily that they want to transition to be a boy. They just don't want to be a girl.
Yeah.
And so they're landing in this middle ground of calling themselves non-binary. It's just like, hey, I'm out of this thing. Like, count me out. I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that. And it's an escape in a certain sense. Some are saying it's like a dissociative mechanism to deal with this anxiety that these kids are going through. And that's a lot of there is a social contagion element to it, where these kids are spending endless hours on their screens in their rooms. Then they're at a public school and two of their friends come out. Before you know it, there's seven identifying as trans. So there is a social contagion element to this. And that's coming out more and more in the research.
Let's go to phones, because there are quite a few people who'd like to talk with you. All right.
Okay.
Jason Everett, our guest, your calls welcome. 888-318-7884. Let's go to Walt in Malvern, Pennsylvania, listening on the EWTN app. Walt, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hey, Jason, I wonder if how much of this is driven by a lack of relationship with people's fathers. And also, well, sort of a statement, but I guess I want to know if you agree with this. A lot of this is also driven by the pharmaceutical companies and medical institutions that make a lot of money on people's misery, much like contraception.
Yeah, well, to address the second point first, in terms of the amount of money involved in this, it's staggering. For a guy to have a surgery, or for a female to get a surgery to construct a pseudo male genital, can cost upwards of $100,000. And so when insurance are covering these things, somebody's getting that money. The hospitals are getting this stuff, the pharmaceutical companies, because when a person transitions, if you want to take on the secondary sex characteristics of the opposite sex, so when a person goes on cross-sex hormones, they don't develop the primary sexual organs. organs, the reproductive organs of the other sex. What they develop are secondary sex characteristics. So when a girl goes on testosterone, she's going to have a deeper voice, eventually some facial hair. It'll change the redistribution of fat in her body, and it'll give her a more masculinized appearance. And so it's a masculinization of a female body, not a transition to a male body. But if she wants to retain that look, but if she goes off the testosterone, within 3 weeks, things start going back to where they normally were. So you have to keep up the dosage of this. Within 5 years of that, the woman is going to have to get a hysterectomy because her uterus will begin to atrophy. It becomes so painful, they have to take it out. But 10 years, 20, 30 years later, she still has to be on these hormones. But if a guy, for example, or to have an orchiectomy, which is to have the testes removed, and then 10 years later realize, oh my goodness, that wasn't a good decision. Now he has to go on testosterone supplements for the rest of his life to produce the testosterone that his body normally cannot anymore after that surgery. And so whether you detransition or not, in many respects, you could be slaves to the pharmaceutical industry for the rest of your natural life to maintain the desired appearance because your body isn't producing those hormones. And so the amount of investors getting involved in this and realize, like, wait a minute, there is a lot of money to be had between the surgeries, the cross-sex hormones. I mean, Planned Parenthood is diving into this and getting clinics set up. And hey, come on in, get your puberty blockers, get your cross-sex hormones, just come on in. A lot of money to be had here. Now, in terms of the psychological thing, what I have found with gender dysphoria is everybody is unique. Everybody's got their own story. And for some, does it involve a broken relationship with a father, a lack of connection with that masculine identity with your own father? Sometimes that's the case. I met a guy a few weeks ago, and for him, his struggle began with online pornography, that he started with a pornographic addiction, and then he discovered these genres of transgender pornography that confused him but excited him at the same time, and then began making him question, why am I getting aroused by this type of thing? Maybe this is something that is a part of my identity. And some people suffer sexual abuse and want to disassociate from their body as a way to deal with the trauma. Everybody's got their own story. That's why having this narrative, oh, you experienced dysphoria, you're trans, here's your hormones, that is way too flat of a narrative. We need to go deeper into these layers, listen to their stories, and give them the mental health support that they actually need. That is, it's not a transphobic attitude toward them.
Walt, thank you very, very much for those very fine questions. Very helpful. There's lots of folks on the line, so I'm going to keep moving. There is just one line open right now, 888-318-7884. We're talking about gender with Jason Evert. Jason has a new book out now. You can get it right now, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. 888-318-7884. I go now to Jen in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on Iowa Catholic Radio. Hi, Jen. Got a question for Jason?
Hi there. Yes, I do. Thanks for being with us this evening. In your opening comment, you talked about the fact that these kids are confused and that God has put this in their lives, this transgender situation. And to me, it just seems hard to understand that because it just seems so sinister and so evil. I don't know how God can be causing such confusion over so many people and having such a dramatic effect on our children and our society.
Yeah, no, to clarify, I wouldn't say that God is causing this in the children, that God is somehow imposing this upon them, but rather that this is a reality that these young people are struggling with, and that we need to remind those young people that God loves them, that he does not hate them. There's a verse in the Old Testament that says, Lord, you loathe nothing that you have created, for you would not have created something if you hated it. And so we need to remind them that God doesn't see you as like this walking abomination, and he doesn't look upon you and say, oh, see that person choosing that gender dysphoria, how disobedient they are. What we're talking about here is a diagnosable mental health condition. If you look in the DSM-5, which is, you know, the essentially catalog of mental health disorders, personality disorders, gender dysphoria is right in there. And so right alongside many of these other things, whether it's borderline personality disorder, bipolar, you know, schizophrenic, you name it, this is one of those. And so we need to not look at these things as God causing it in the life of that person, but rather that person suffering from that thing. That might not be like a physical ailment. The problem isn't in the body. The problem is in the mind. And so we need to reassure them that God loves them and he has a plan for their life. And we need to show the love of Christ. Because if Jesus Christ was walking this earth right now, he'd be going to lunch with them. He'd be having dinner with these people. He'd be hanging out with them. I mean, you look at the pastoral life of Christ, the public ministry, you know, he was with those that were rejected by the Pharisees of like, you're unclean, you're not fit to come into our church, you don't have all your stuff together. He would go to those peripheries and engage in those people and walk with them. And so I think we have a responsibility to do the same thing.
Makes sense, Jen?
Yes, it does. I appreciate the clarification. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very, very much, Jen. Lots of every line full now, because lots of folks would like to talk with Jason Evert about this topic. As a matter of fact, this is the book we've needed, and Jason is certainly the guy to write it. He's been dealing directly with, well, people of all ages on issues surrounding chastity and marriage and the entire gamut of the sexual revolution, confronting ideas that have been hurting people for a long time. So I'm just delighted that he has this new book out. I'm sure you will be as well. It's helpful to you. You want to answer basic questions about gender, like how many genders are there? What if my daughter says she's trans? Do some people have an intersex brain? Or whatever the other questions are, he tackles it in there. Male, female, other? A Catholic guide to understanding gender. As I said, we got a whole bunch of folks on the line, so just hang on. We'll be right back with more questions for Jason Evert on gender on Catholic Answers Live. The recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade was a monumental victory for the pro-life movement. But the fight is far from over. With our new booklet, Why We're Pro-Life, we have produced the perfect tool to prepare you to have peaceful and convincing conversations to shed light on the truth about human life from conception to natural death. Catholic Answers is printing millions of copies of this booklet, and we plan simply to give them away. You can help us in two ways. First, by generously supporting this project. 25 cents prints one book. $2,500 prints 10,000, and so on. Second, by helping us distribute the booklet through your parish, your school, or the pro-life ministry you work with. Catholic Answers is going to blanket the country with Why We're Pro-Life, but only if you step up and help us. Thank you so much. For more information, visit whyweareprolife.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Catholic Answers Live is 25 years old. That's a quarter century helping people come into deeper communion with the Catholic faith. As we move into our second quarter century, please help us reach thousands more by becoming a Society 315 monthly donor. Right now, when you join Society 315 at a monthly giving level of $25 or more, we've added some extra perks to the other great benefits we already offer members. Go to givecatholic.com and choose the monthly option to start your donation.
Hi, this is Janet Williams. Please join us for Women of Grace tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's always a great benefit to us, and I know to many people, when Jason Evert is here. Usually we're talking about chastity. Jason's website is chastity.com. He does chastity talks all over. You can find out about that there. He also has Lust is Boring. That's a podcast.
Yeah, it's a podcast. We release an episode every week and a half or so.
Well, that is very contrary to the narrative. Lust is boring.
Yeah.
Everybody else is trying to sell it.
It's like, wait a minute, if that's boring, then what's exciting? And then kind of the hook there. God's plan for human love is a lot more exciting than getting used.
And you've been all over the world doing chastity talks, but you were saying before we started the program today that you're doing at universities and parishes, a lot of more people are asking for gender talks. We're just come and explain this to us.
Yeah, the phone's ringing off the hook because, you know, the people are coming to the principal, you know, what's our policy on this? I don't know. And then they ask the pastor, what's our policy? And he's like, well, I didn't go to seminary and study non-binary training. I don't know what this stuff is. And they go to the bishop, what's our policy? And so we're kind of scrambling. And so we're getting a lot of parishes, a lot of universities saying, hey, can you come and give a presentation on this topic? You know, one that will, you know, be pastorally sensitive to the families really wrestling with this, but at the same time, can show the beauty of God's plan for being made male and female.
You can call and talk with Jason right now if you've got a question about this, 888-318-7884. Going to Ginger right here in California, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Ginger, thank you for the call. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. And you are very needed in today's world. So thank you, Jason, for writing this book. My godson is taking hormones to be a girl, and he is got boobs. He's, you know, like a girl, like you were explaining. He doesn't live in the same city as I do, so I don't have very much contact with him or her. He wants us to call her a she now, and it's very hard when I see them, which is not very often. I struggle with that, and he's coming to my son's wedding this month, and thank God my son is marrying a female, and it's not in the church, but anyway, this my godson is coming with his boyfriend and my sister, his mom, and I'm not sure how to deal with this. I'm really struggling. I want to be nice. I always have been accepting of it, but I don't accept it, and I don't know how to do both.
No, it's understandable. And the first and foremost thing is to pray, you know, as your godson, that God has entrusted this child in a way to you that even though you might be far away, you're still able to have an influence in their life through your prayer, your intercession, your fasting. That's first and foremost. The second thing, every time you possibly can, just love on that child. And whether it's his birthday and you can send him a birthday card, a gift from auntie or whatever, a graduation, hey, congratulations. I met a woman recently who was in a similar situation, and her nephew was transitioning to niece, and you know, and she had a real good relationship with the boy, and they were talking about pronouns, and then aunt was like, well, you know, we don't really see eye to eye on this, and I feel like, look, you know I love you, you know I really respect you, but I feel like if I were to use those pronouns for you, I'd feel like I'd be lying to you, and so I kind of feel more comfortable not using that pronoun. Is that okay? And the boy's like, well, just because you're my aunt, I'll let you do that, okay? And so to me, it was like, okay, they had the friendship in place that allowed a little bit of that tension to exist. And sometimes if we don't have that friendship, they say rules without a relationship creates rebellion. And so that's true between God and humanity. It's true between parents and kids. And so I would say take every opportunity that you have when you're in the proximity of that boy or even at a distance to try to build that friendship because they need to know that they're loved by you as they see this going on. And then in the meantime, you can be researching this stuff, learning about it. Okay, why is this going on? What does this mean? What is this hormone that he's on? And what he's calling himself trans this or trans, what does that mean? Really learn the stuff. If you go to our website, chastity.com, and then just do /gender, we have a ton of resources there. I mean, we've got the gender book we just came out with, but lots of links for families of different approaches you can do. Use policies that parishes can put into place, all kinds of resources at chastity.com/gender, interviews, blogs, really research this stuff because a lot of times we're talking past each other because we don't understand their language. It feels like a foreign language. Well, what does it mean? The Z and Zer and this pronoun and that. I don't get all this stuff. It's like if you fall in love with someone who speaks a different language, you probably want to learn the language just for the sake of having that deeper connection. And so it doesn't have to become your first language, but it's worthwhile to learn it. And so I would try to learn where he's coming from, spend a lot of time in love, and then God willing, as you build that friendship, you're going to be able to witness to him, to be able to walk with him of like, hey, have you, you know, tell me, when did you start feeling these things? Like, ask some good questions. Wow, that must have been really, really hard. When did that start happening? So you're asking questions. You're trying to get him to think through stuff, because what we want to do end game, in my opinion, is help them to listen to the dysphoria, because I think the dysphoria is a roadmap towards their healing. Not in the sense of obeying it to transition, but listening to the story that it's telling us. And I'll just give you one quick example. I met a boy and he said that he's trans. We had a great conversation. And he was telling me about his family and that his sisters are so loved by his parents, but he's always the black sheep. Long story short, I said, do you think if you were born a girl, you would have been loved the way your sisters are loved? And he said, I know that I would have been. And to me, that was kind of the key, that he wasn't wanting to be a girl. He was wanting to be loved. But transitioning was the path to find the love that he thought he was, which he was created for. And so I think we want to help them listen to the deeper story that's being told and realizing that transitioning and hormones and surgery isn't the answer to these things, because it isn't that you were born into the wrong body. You were born into the wrong culture. A culture that told you might have to hurt your body in order to be your authentic self. It's the culture that needs to be reconstructed, not your body. And so obviously that might be hard for them to hear, but you're going to want to create some loving tension there to say, hey, look, I love you, but I'm going to challenge you to rethink some of these things. And hopefully you can maintain a friendship in that context.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ginger. Thanks very much for the call. The number is 888-318-7884. Our guest is Jason Evert, and he was just mentioning the website chastity.com, but he's got a new book on the whole gender thing from a Catholic perspective, male, female, other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. If you have questions about the gender issue or related topics, you're welcome to call. You don't have to be Catholic. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We're going now to Boise, Idaho. Rebecca in Boise, Idaho, listening on Salt and Light Radio. Glad you're here, Rebecca. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Thank you, Jason, so much for writing this book. I can hardly wait to get my hands on it. I counsel a young woman that is gay, and I understand, you know, the difference between the gay and lesbian or the lifestyle, but I'm not really sure I understand the binary thing. So could you explain that and what that means?
Yeah. The idea of a binary is that whether we're male and female and it's a rigid either or, that's a binary. It's a very strict way of looking at reality, male or female. So non-binary is saying, you know what, that isn't really true. That isn't necessarily male or female. There's a whole spectrum that could be present there. And so non-binary is saying, it's not necessarily I'm transitioning from male to female. I'm recognizing that those aren't the only two options. I could be kind of outside of gender or in between the genders. And so non-binary is essentially saying not either or, but rather outside or in between of those genders. And so some of this confusion was caused by a Dr. Ann Fausto Sterling, who came out with an article saying that there's at least five different sexes. And she was basing that on the reality that there are some disorders of sexual development. But she was trying to conclude from that reality that, oh, well, there's all these different sexes. It's like, no. There's only two sexes, and that's it. But there can be disorders of sexual development, and you hear of things like Klinefelter syndrome that some men suffer with, and, you know, Turner syndrome that some women go through. But these things are not third or fourth or fifth sexes or genders. In fact, people who experience various intersex conditions or disorders of sexual development, the two aren't necessarily the same, are often quite resentful when they try to get lumped into the whole trans identity. It's like, well, wait a minute, no, I'm not trans. You know, I am a man who simply has XX chromosomes, but because of this and that, chromosomally, I developed into a man, although my chromosomes don't line up that way. And so they tried to infer from the fact that there's some disorders of sexual development that sex is a spectrum, and what they tried to pull out of that is that therefore gender is neither male nor female. It's a whole infinite continuum, and you decide where you land on that. And so non-binary, to put it short, it's basically it's not either male or female. it's somewhere outside or in between those categories.
Okay. Can I ask one additional follow-up question?
Sure. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So my understanding then is that with seeing some kids in our society today, some of them just don't want anything to do with being labeled as a male or female, and they don't mm-hmm. have tendencies to be lesbian or gay or whatever, or transgender. They just don't want to be associated with all the stigmas that come with being labeled a male or female. Is that a true description of what one would say, that I'm being non-binary?
Yeah, well, two things to distinguish there. We need to distinguish sexual attraction from sexual identity. And so if a person says, I'm not attracted to anybody, I don't want any sexual activity, I identify as asexual, that isn't so much speaking about their sexual identity as their sexual attractions. When it comes to gender, and this is where people get confused, they're like, oh, you're gay? That means you're transitioning to a girl. No. One way they put it is, you know, sexual attractions is who you go to bed with. Sexual identity is who you go to bed as. That's kind of this popular phrase that they use to explain that we're talking about your internal sense of identity, not necessarily who you're attracted to. And so these are two distinct issues. And so when it comes to the non-binary thing, you're right. There's a lot of young people, especially young girls, that are landing in this category, finding a home in it. Abigail Schreier wrote a fantastic book called Irreversible Damage. And in it, she said that young women today are fleeing womanhood like a house on fire without any particular destination in mind. And to me, it's such a fitting metaphor for what's going on, of just how the anxiety level of being an adolescent girl today is so overwhelming. A lot of girls just want to get out of the building. It's not necessarily that they want male genitals. The vast majority of females who transition do not get bottom surgery. They have no desire whatsoever to get that. They just want to distance themselves from what society expects women to be, because they feel like they never felt that, filled that mold to begin with.
Rebecca, I'm going to have to say thanks and leave it there, because we have to take this break. We'll come right back. We do have some lines open, so if you want to ask your question of Jason Everett, you're very welcome. 888-318-7884. Back to the phones right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
One of the reasons we should go to Mass is because, if you look in the Catechism, you will see the fruits of Holy Communion. And these are remarkable things that we can receive at every Mass that we attend. We encounter the risen Lord, and he shares something of his divine life and love with us.
The Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, live from the EWTN Chapel, every morning, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour is Jason Everett. Next hour, Swan Sona will be here, and we're going to talk with Swan about the various controversies around the veneration of icons or the use of art in worship. If you have questions along those lines, we often have those discussions with our Protestant brothers and sisters as Catholics. We have those discussions. But we'll also take a look at the Orthodox Christian side of that. And can we accept all of what the Orthodox do as far as the veneration of icons? Very interesting conversation to have with Swan Sona the next hour. If you're interested in art or the use of art or the use of images in worship and in the spiritual and religious life, it will be a perfect hour for you. This hour, if you'd like to talk with Jason Everett about his new book, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender, we'd love to take your call. 888-318-7884. Lee in Oklahoma is next, listening on 97.3 FM. Lee, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Jason.
Okay, great. Thank you. Back to the transgender. I was probably a sophomore in high school when Roe v. Wade happened and the gender thing. Grew up in a small town anyway. Never really occurred to me how transgendered females would affect female sports, because, you know, if you went to school and learned, you cannot change your DNA. You can change the outside of your body with plastic surgery, but you still have the blueprint of a male inside your body. Of course they're going to win women's sports. And I feel like the future is going to be gradual, but eventually be male sports and transgendered female sports. And that's the point I'm making. I just really don't understand why DNA is not an issue in this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's thankfully there's people even within the trans community that are very outspoken about the problem with it. I mean, Bruce transitioning to Caitlyn Jenner is very outspoken. And this is disastrous to women's sports, because when you don't take into account the fact that men have greater aerobic and anaerobic capacity, they have a larger heart, their joints are differently, their tendons are stronger. I think it's 95% of men have a grip strength that's stronger than 90% of women. So from head to toe, I mean, we're completely different beings. I think a man has in the upper body more than 40% more lean muscle mass than a woman does. And so when you're competing in a sport, you're not competing against somebody else's identity. You're competing against their body. And so it doesn't matter what you identify as. That's not who you're competing against. You're competing against that person's body. And so when we've got guys that now are women, guys that identify as female, entering into mixed martial arts competitions against females and beating them unconscious, it's like, okay, who's going to sound the red flag here? When we've got the Connecticut State Track and Field Championships, and you've got a couple boys there that identify as female, and they're blowing the girls out of the water, and the girls get up to the blocks, and they're like, I have no chance to win this race. And not only that, but the girl who was supposed to come in, you know, fourth, who maybe could have gotten that college scholarship, she comes in fifth or sixth because of that. Now we're talking about scholarship money. Now we're talking more about just not a place on the podium, but where you're going to spend the next 4 years of your life and how much money that's going to cost you. A lot of controversy. I mean, you look at the prison systems now, more than 40 states have men who identify as women in female prisons. Now we're getting sexual assaults, we're getting rape, we're getting, you name it, pregnancies in the prisons. And it's, well, what's going on here is, I think what Vatican II said, that when God is forgotten, the creature itself grows unintelligible. Meaning, if we lose sight of supernatural realities, it'll actually come to the point where we can't even see natural realities. I mean, over in England, they're categorizing sex crimes based upon gender identity, which means there's these headlines now: woman molests three kids, woman caught with child pornography. Those aren't women. Those are guys who identify as women. And so now the majority, get this, of female sex offenders in the United Kingdom are men. But they're categorized as females because that's what they identify as. And so this is just the end result of like a long division problem I help my kids with. And at the very bottom, it's way off. We track it to the beginning. Oh, there, that's where you missed. One digit was off. And as a result of that, the errors became compounded exponentially. And the same thing happens when we lose sight of what it means to be male and female.
What do you think, Lee?
So it makes me think, why did we have two separate categories to begin with in Olympic sports? There's men's sports and there's women's sports. And now that's not a fact at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't diminish the women's sports at all that she's not beating men. That doesn't diminish a woman's sport that it has its own separate category. That would be like thinking that some undefeated boxer who went 60-0 wasn't that great because he never fought an opponent that was 15 pounds above his weight class. It's like, no, you're categorized for the sake of fairness, and that's what allows you to see these truly excellent athletes in their own divisions. But when we let the men play in women's sports, this is not about trans athletes. This is about men competing in female sports is what it's about. Then there's no place for women. I mean, what's all the fight that they did for Title IX, all the freedom for women's sports? It's all down the drain. And thankfully, Catholics and Christians are not the only ones pointing this out. There's plenty of people on the left that don't agree to us with lots of other political, ethical issues that are saying, look, this is going a step too far.
I think one of those is the author of all the Harry Potter books, J.K. Rowling, who's been quite outspoken that, her take is, I am a woman and I fought my whole life to have certain standing as a woman. And just because, you've been a man for 45 years and now you want to claim all of the, all of the kind of cred, I guess, of being a woman. And her take is, you're not a woman. And I'm perfectly willing to call you, I think she said she's willing to use the term trans woman, but not call you a woman or say that you should compete in women's sports or that. Now, as you said, J.K. Rowling hasn't been like our Catholic ally or something. Yeah. She's just a regular person living her life and writing these books and saying. And now they're just killing her in social media and in news shows and all that. I really find the word transphobic in such a context horrifically unjust because I'm sure there are people who are transphobic who are literally afraid of a trans person. But that's not what J.K. Rowling is. She's not afraid of anybody. She doesn't have a phobia. She doesn't have a mental problem. She's saying, I'm a woman. Yeah. You're not a woman.
Yeah. And I really believe the vast majority of people completely agree with her, but they're scared to speak up like she is because then they're afraid they're going to get crucified and fired or whatever. So they just lay low and just do the whole you do you thing. But I remember reading one feminist author, not a Christian, and she said, a woman is a person with a female body and any personality, not a person with a female personality and any body. And so I thought that put it pretty succinctly because if you think about it, gender stereotypes tried to get people to conform their personality to match their body. So you're male, then you better act like this. Gender theory does the opposite. It tries to get people to conform their body to match their personality, meaning your personality is over here. We got to augment the body to fit that. And so neither approach, overly rigid gender stereotypes or gender theory, is the answer. I think what we've got to realize is just we got to avoid this over accentuation of gender and not eliminate gender, but realize there's a lot of space here for us to be male and female. And you don't have to fit this cookie cutter mold. I had lunch with a nun a while ago. She was a nun, she was a surgeon, she was a doctor, and she was a colonel in the United States Army. And I'm like, wow, like you just feel like not being an astronaut because you're lazy or like, well, like you're trying to hog all the vocations yourself. But she wasn't doing these things instead of motherhood. Like she was mothering through these things. And so I think she does a great job of showing like, hey, you don't have to fit into this box. Womanhood is not a box or a cage. It's a firm foundation upon which you can stand to bloom into who God created you to be.
Lee, I appreciate the fascinating questions. All that satisfying to you?
Yes, very much so. I appreciate it, and thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and I do hope lots and lots of people will look for Jason Evert's new book. I think it's so much needed. It's often people will ask me questions, and I don't know the answer to them because I haven't heard that term yet. I'm old and past my expiration date as far as being up on terminology. But Jason, he's not that old, and he does keep up on this stuff. So male, female, other, a Catholic guide to understanding gender. I think it would be useful for anyone, not just for Catholics. Although the Catholic Church has a long tradition of moral thinking and frankly metaphysical thinking about reality in the light of the revelation of God's love in the person of Jesus Christ. And so this will be helpful to anybody who's of goodwill and wants to know. Check it out. Male, female, other, a Catholic guide to understanding gender. I think we have one more call and I want to try to get that person on. Let's get Brian in Salt Lake City, Utah, watching on YouTube on. Brian, we are a bit towards the end, so if you could be kind of quick with your question, that will help Jason.
No, I'm extremely, but I mean, thanks to everyone. May God bless. There's a lot of changes that's going on. And my question, as I was talking to we call that the individual that talks to us before we talk to you guys, the anchor man.
we just call him Edgar.
Terrible, terrible name, I know. but what? How far is this third wave feminism going to go? I can no longer...
Well, Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Jason, because we got very little time. So go ahead, Jason. How long or how far?
Well, it's already started. Imagine a snake that starts to eat its own tail, that finally reaches the point where it's up to its head and it's not entirely sure what to do. That's what's happened with feminism. It started to devour its own tail of what is the woman, what is our identity, and then it's now curled around the point where it's like, wait a minute, we've lost all of these rights that first and second wave feminism were fighting toward, to be distinct, from men but equal. And now the man can become a woman. And so I think there's only one way for the pendulum to go. And frankly, that's for this wave of detransitioners to help everybody wake up and realize that if we don't even know what it means, male and female anymore, it's a time to rediscover ourselves in the light of God.
Brian, thank you very, very much. Chastity.com is where you can find out all about what Jason Everett does. Maybe get him to talk at your school, maybe about chastity, but more and more talks on gender, especially at universities and parishes. Check out the podcast, Lust is Boring. And if lust is boring, there must be something else that's exciting. And there is, and Jason will help you find it. And don't forget to check for the book, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender, out now from Jason Everett. Jason, thank you very much for a very, very fine hour.
Good to be with you, Si. Thank you.
It's always good when you're here. You're always very, very helpful. And what I always take away, too, is this is not a judgment. We need to be loving and compassionate after the model of Jesus himself. We'll be right back with Swan Sona on Catholic Answers Live.